Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Glenn Greenwich coming to you live from New York City, Jamaica, Queens. And we've got an interesting show for you today. We've got Mr. Roy R. And he is Roy R. Paul. And he's going to be on our show in a few minutes, but we're going to get started with our declaration and a couple of the free things that we do, and then we'll bring in our special guest. The Declaration of the International Black Summit: we declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There is nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community, responsibility, and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991. October 31st, 2014, north, south, east, west, above, below, within, and around. A moment of silence, please. Thank you. The purpose of the International Black Summit is to provide an opportunity for participants to bring into being their vision for the black community and the world. The purpose, now, some of you may know or may not be aware, some of our newer listeners, we actually have three distinctions inside of the International Black Summit. There is the Black Youth Summit, and then there's a Black Young Adult Summit. So the purpose of the International Black Youth Summit is we exist to facilitate the connection, self-expression, and empowerment of young people of African descent around the world. We are young people making our visions real in our communities and exemplifying the principles of youth transformation, love, and possibility as a powerful approach to the universe. The purpose for the International Black Young Adult Summit is to provide an opportunity for participants ages 18 to 35 a space for reflection, communication, mentorship, and growth through the vision created and through vision creation and implementation. This conversation empowers young adults to powerfully transition to adulthood equipped for global success. So those are a couple of the spaces of the International Black Summit, and we always have something that we're working on, so we'll talk a little bit about that at one of the breaks coming up. But any information that you'd like is available at www.blacksummit.org. So that's www.blacksummit.org. And don't forget, this year is going to be our 25th annual event. So we are celebrating that. I was one of the people at the first event. I have not gone to all 25 events. I've gone to 22. Well, this year will be the 22nd out of the 25 events. So I've been to a lot of the summits that we've had. And let me introduce my co-host, Ms. Henrietta Bird from Chi-Town, the Windy City.
How are you, Glenn? It's the cold city today. It's not windy. It's cold.
Okay, I hear you. Well, we're supposed to get some of that blast on the East Coast as well. So mm-hmm. I get it. So what else is happening out there? You guys, you talked about doing some early voting today. Is that one of the ways to do that?
Okay. Actually, that's where I'm headed now, to go in early vote. We have until Sunday at 5 o'clock that we can vote early in Chicago. And so I'm going to head that way and talk to some people and see how they feel about it. Chicago is the black community in Chicago has some intrigue, a little different than usual. But there is a candidate that people are looking at that is in a different party than general. And I'm saying this because, you know, the summit is not a, we don't do politics or whatever, but we do keep up with the current events. And so as I get over to the early voting, I'll keep you informed as to what's going on with the people in line. So that's I'll just say it like that until I get over there, okay?
Okay. All right. Very good. Very good. Well, with that, I'm going to bring on our special guest, this young man, Roy R. Paul, is a political commentator. He's a speaker. He's an analyst. He has been on several networks, including WABC. That's Channel 7 here in New York. And he has done a lot of interviews and has some interesting perspectives on what's going on in our community. One of the things I want to really make sure that we acknowledge is that he made history becoming the youngest African-American to ever be elected to public office in New York State when he was just 19 years old, and becoming a part of the school board member in Middletown, New York. And he served on that board for 5 years. So without further ado, please welcome Mr. Roy Paul to our the International Black Summit Talk Show Radio. Welcome.
Thank you. It's so good to be with you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It is so good to be with you both.
Thank you. Glad to have you.
So we wanted to at least start off the conversation with some conversation around the midterms and what do you see are the problems in getting our folks out, and then the second question, you know, what kind of things can we impact? So let's start with the first question. What do you see happening with the midterms with getting our folks out to vote?
Sure. I will answer both questions as best as I can. I think that during the midterm elections, there is no surprise with the pundits who are looking at the landscape that the Republicans seem to be much better positioned to have success across the board than the Democrats. As you all know, the President, Barack Obama, is in a lame duck session because he has 2 years left of his tenure, and so many people aren't looking at him anymore as the golden boy, so to speak, within the political party for the Democrats. In fact, many Democratic candidates for the House of Representatives and the United States Senate have not even asked the President to campaign for them in their home districts. They have surrogates like Hillary Clinton, and Bill Clinton going out, stomping on the ground, trying to drum up Democratic support, which I think goes to show that the president, as well as many people within the Democratic Party, know and understand that he is not necessarily in the best position to be touting support within any group. Now, when it comes to trying to galvanize support within the African-American communities across the country, it is unfortunate that we continually have that conversation because everyone needs to be engaged in the political process because at the end of the day, everything is political. on your job, if you are a female and you are being paid less than your male counterparts, that is a political issue. And the only way to really put remedies to those issues is to get teeth into our legislation politically. If you are someone on your job and you are unable to take leave off of your work because you are pregnant, that is a political issue. And so I always tell people, no matter what issues you are facing in your community, from the sanitation department not picking up your garbage when they're supposed to the bus not running on time, these are all political issues that affect our lives, which behooves all of us to get involved in the best way that we possibly can. Everyone can't do the same thing, but everybody can do something. And I always encourage people to do the best that they can to get involved. African-Americans in particular seem to feel many times that there aren't Democrats or Republicans that are speaking to the core issues of the African-American Party. If you remember, there was a famous rift with Tavis Smiley and Dr. Cornel West with the president for not having a quote-unquote black agenda and not specifically targeting the African-American community when it comes to issues like joblessness. And the lack of affordable health care or educational opportunities. Therefore, other African-Americans who agree with that sentiment turn a blind eye to politics in general. People say politicians are crooks. Politicians only do things for themselves. If there's not a kickback that they can provide, they're not interested. And that has unfortunately tainted the political system. The only way to get around that is to organize. I always have a saying, because I grew up in a household and in a community where people got involved. There was the NAACP, and if you made someone upset, you better believe that the next day there was going to be a crowd of people outside your home, not your office, but your home. People were very bold, and they picketed outside your home as you were getting ready to leave to go to work. And so I knew that organizing was really the remedy to make sure that people really understood what their rights were, and that's how people politically exercised what their voice was. They went out and they organized and they galvanized people together. So that's what I think needs to happen now. There are certain pockets of communities around the country. Here in New York City, in Southeast Queens in particular, a heavy African-American community that is going through, I think, a political renaissance. There are people who are elected to serve the community and in some cases have not exercised proper judgment. There are a lot of legal activity that has taken place with corruption charges and indictments. And I think people have gotten to a point where they're not going to allow people to take advantage of their communities. And people say things like, oh, I am so popular and therefore I cannot be opposed. There are people who have been elected who have not been challenged in years or decades. And I think the political system has allowed itself to become that way. It takes a lot of money to run a race, especially if you want to go up against an incumbent who has the access to capital and name recognition. So how do you do that? And in some communities like Southeast Queens, where the per capita income, although they say it's $50,000 plus, there are certain pockets of Southeast Queens where the per capita income is $15,000, $16,000 a year. In those districts in particular, very difficult to find someone to raise $100,000 to go up against an incumbent. But somehow that's being turned around to say that since there are no challengers, that everyone's so popular and everyone approves of the work that's being done. I don't think that's necessarily the case. And so community organizing, I think, is really going to be the two words that you're going to hear a lot of, not just in 2014, but in 2015 and 2016 as we move to the next presidential election. Who is going to do the better job like Obama did in 2008 to organize and mobilize people to feel a sense of purpose, feel a sense of community? Because people aren't going to vote, whether it's in the midterm elections or in 2016, if they don't feel as if that they're worth going out, taking the time to go to the polls is going to result in some actual change. No one wants to vote for someone just because you're a Democrat. No one wants to vote for someone just because we have to elect the new Democrat to succeed Barack Obama. What are you going to do and what is your message going to be to all communities to say your vote, your time, it's worth it and you should be putting it in a certain place?
Excellent, excellent response. I wanted to find out And would you let our listeners know the importance of the midterm elections? Because I think that, that's something that people kind of fall asleep about, don't feel like it's important enough. And, in fact, it may be one of the most important times to come out. So what's your opinion on that?
Well, you hit it on the head when you said it's the most important time to come out. I think that midterms and primaries are the opportunities for real change to happen. And these are diehard voters, typically. Unfortunately, the numbers are about 30% less in primary or midterm elections than in general elections. And that's a huge staggering number because the numbers to start off with aren't very large. In the primary and in the midterm elections, this is where you see how policy gets affected. For example, immigration reform. If the Republicans take control, there will be no immigration reform. That is decided in the primary and the midterm elections because these are the people, candidate-wise, who are pandering to the diehards of each particular party. These are the political base, the people who will sit around the kitchen table and for no money organize around the candidates. These are the people who decide what the agenda is going to be. So for the next 2 years of President Obama's presidency, if there's going to be immigration reform or the protection of Obamacare, affordable health care, this is when it's going to be decided. Right now, because once the midterms are over and we've got to govern for the next year and a half, the policy and the agenda that's going to be set in place are going to be predicated on the party base, the people who came out and voted in the midterms who are reelected or elected new people to go back to Congress.
Wow. So if I hear this right, you're saying that they are actually much more important because the actual implementation of the general policies or the national policies by the local politicians and therefore are more directly impacting the quality of our life as we know it in our neighborhood community.
Absolutely. And the tides can change because of the midterm or primary elections. This is exactly why when after a presidential or after a general election in November, when, for example, in 2008, when President Obama got elected, people always say, well, why isn't he doing this? Why isn't he doing that? He's not doing that because, yes, he was elected in the general election, but the people who govern in Congress who actually vote to pass the laws have to worry about the midterm elections and the people who are at the diehard base of the party. And so if you don't have support within the general, within the primary or within the midterm elections, then you're not going to get anything after all is said and done, even though the popular vote is what elects the president. People often think that the president is what runs the party, and that's not the case. The agenda is driven by the base, not the president. So the diehard rank-and-file members of Congress, they go to President Obama and they say, this is not going to fly in my district, and when I go for election in 2 years, I may not make it if I pass this, if I vote for that. And so they set the tone, and then the president has to lead from the top, but he can only apply so much pressure because at the end of the day, the people who come out in the general elections in November aren't the same people who come out in midterm or primary elections.
So, folks out there, I hope that you're really listening to this conversation because it is something that we all need to really understand and be mindful of. Because we're talking about something that is near and dear to us all, and is important for us to utilize our voting inside of these midterm elections. What would you say would be one of the main concerns going forward? You mentioned immigration. People are concerned with jobs and the minimum wage. There are a few things that are emerging. What do you see that is emerging that is going to impact our community, maybe even the most?
So I still think it comes down to jobs. I think within the African American community in particular, you still see one of the highest rates of unemployment and joblessness that you see across the board. And part of this is private-public partnerships. I cannot stress enough how important it is to create that link within the private sector and the public sector to create opportunities for job growth. And you know, Glenn, more than anybody else, how important it is to make sure that quality jobs are brought into neighborhoods and into communities, especially communities of color. I don't think Walgreens is a bad company, but I wouldn't call that economic development. I certainly wouldn't call it job creation. People who are making minimum wage but can't even afford to pay half the rent, not even the whole rent, but half the rent, working 40 hours a week. That's not job creation. And so we need to get back to how do we sit at the table and put all of our resources together to bring in companies that are going to be paying lucrative jobs so that people can afford to live in their own communities. And until that happens, I don't think we can have a conversation about what success looks like within the African-American community when it comes to putting people to work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you've hit on several of the critical conversations, certainly for this upcoming election. And what would you personally like to see for the New York City area and for maybe even Southeast Queens specifically? Is there anything that catches your fancy or I know that you're currently living in Harlem, but you're looking at coming back into Southeast Queens.
Oh no, I've moved. I've moved back to Southeast Queens already.
Oh, you have? Okay.
I have. Yes.
Okay.
And I did that, in part for a number of reasons. But one, I was at a debate. I moderated a debate for the state senate, District 14, Malcolm Smith, Leroy Conley, and Munir Avery.
Yes.
And it was an excellent opportunity to moderate that debate, but I was very disheartened because I didn't see a lot of policy discussions being floated back and forth, especially when it came to alternatives. And unfortunately, I think there was a sense that policy does not matter, especially when you're talking about elections. People vote for people that they like. They vote for people who, you know, have that swagger. They walk in, they shake their hands, they kiss the ladies on the cheek, and people get flustered. And you talk about actually what you've done or what you're going to do, and that's not a conversation that a lot of people like to have. Well, I think that's very unfortunate. And in Southeast Queens, I don't think we can afford not to have that conversation. I think when you look at the state of what's going on now with the subprime mortgage crisis that's still going on, that people are still being affected by, when you look at the rents, and how they're rising, when you look at education and what's coming in the next couple of years, when you look at the lack of educational opportunities for professional degrees in Southeast Queens, if you want to get a professional degree right now, you have to travel into Manhattan or Long Island. These are all things that we need to have a conversation about, and how do we engage people into making sure that we get resources that allow people to stay within the Southeast Queens borders when they want to get quality access to everything from education to jobs. And until that happens, I think that there is an absolute void that needs to be filled. And to the extent that I can be a part of that conversation, I want to, because I don't see the politics being something that is of the future. I don't see many of the representatives being something that is of the future. I'm not singling anyone out in particular, but I don't see what the master plan is for revitalization. I don't hear the conversation about having a master plan for revitalization. And until that happens, I think we need voices to tweak the conversation, to be that wedge that sticks it in, they always say, wait a second, what's going on here? And I just don't see a lot of that happening. I see community groups that are doing wonderful work, and they all have their niche. They protest, they march, they do what they have to do. But when it comes down to actually asking critical conversation, what does economic development look like in Southeast Queens? When the crossings happens in downtown Jamaica, how do we turn that into actual jobs? If people want to be entrepreneurs and start their own businesses, how do we have some kind of a public-private partnership with those people who are building those wonderful commercial buildings to create space for entrepreneurs, to make sure that the local businesses that come downtown aren't Gap and Old Navy. And so that's the conversation that needs to be happening. And if the elected officials aren't having it, then I think we need to tell them that we want to have that conversation.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, you know, you've always had some sizzling conversation, my friend, and today was no different. You know, I think that you have certainly hit on the, again, the real hot spots. And I want to underline a couple things so that our listeners are real clear. And even though we may be talking about Southeast Queens, I think it's a conversation that is a national conversation for areas who are underrepresented and who are of Black African descent need to be listening up for and really taking heed to. And so a couple of the points I want to underline is the importance of the midterm elections in affecting the quality of life in your particular neighborhood directly. So a lot of people don't come out to that event, and as Mr. Paul said, 30% of us don't come out on those midterm elections, and those may, in fact, be the most important elections to determine policy that's going to impact our areas directly. The other conversation I want to underline is the having a master economic development plan. Because if you don't have a plan of where you want to take the community, how are you going to generate jobs, and what are you going to do with things, we're going to be in big trouble. So we're going to keep getting those low-end jobs. Another point that I want to underline is the having professional education, professional jobs, professional housing, all available in the areas that we live and not have to go to another area to have those kind of things. So all of that needs to be included put together in a way that manifests an economic development plan that supports where we see ourselves and the vision for our Black communities around the country. So again, Mr. Paul, Mr. Roy, R. Paul, thank you so much for being part of this conversation. Thank you for bringing the knowledge to us that you share and the vitality that you bring. It's so nice to engage in a conversation with someone in your age group that is knowledgeable and has done some research and understands the history of what has taken place and can help guide us with, you know, where we want to get to in the future. So, again, you know, thank you so much. You certainly can stay on. I'm going to shift the conversation a little bit to Henrietta, and hopefully she's been able to catch up with some of the early voters. Henrietta? Oh, just lost her again. She just dropped. So we're having a little technical difficulty with that, but she'll be calling back in momentarily. This is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network, and the summit, the International Black Summit, is a conversation that is being given by life to the world through people of Black African descent. The conversation finds its expression in the Declaration of the International Black Summit. It's an event that takes place every first weekend in August of each year, attended by people of Black African descent who are committed to the unfoldment of the Declaration in their lives. Will you ask maybe what is available through this summit? The summit is a gathering of people of Black African descent from diverse backgrounds, countries, lifestyles, opinions, and views who come together to celebrate and empower the vision of the Declaration. It's also an exploration of questions, issues which empower participants to empower participants to realize their vision for the Black community and the world. And it's a place to clear yourself to be able to hear what life is telling you. It's also acknowledgement of praise and celebration of who we are as a people and the contribution we are to the world. It's also a global shift in the conversation about who people of Black African descent are in the world. And we've got Ms. Henrietta Byrd back in the conversation. Back to you, Henrietta.
Hi, Glenn. Hi. Hello again to our guests. Interestingly enough, this is Chicago, and since I spoke to you 30 minutes ago, it is now snowing, cold, and windy.
Oh, my goodness.
And, really cold and really windy. And the line that was an hour or so long when I talked to you 30 minutes ago is, of course, now very not that long. I won't say how long it is because I'm not really sure, but there may be now about 25 people in line. And we do have a lot of seniors out, people who have come on the buses, you know, that support handicapped people. And so that's a good showing. But it's cold, you know, it's been kind of decent all week. But today is a cold day. We do have two more days. We have two more days of early voting. And it sounds like they've had a really good turnout. So we'll just see. Thank you. Thank you. And we do have, because this particular place is in the middle of, it's in Jackson Park, Glenn, if you remember, 63rd and Stony Island, right off the lake. So it's, it's a community that's in between Woodlawn, right at the tip of Woodlawn, then Hyde Park. It's another outlying area, so that's a very diverse community, and South Shore. And that's where the people who can early vote at this place come to. And so you do have all age groups. And just like looking around, it's, you know, a very diverse group of people. And I may have been off a little bit. There might be about 35, 40 people here. And they do have chairs for everyone. So it's comfortable. And it's at a park district. So they have room. They have room for everyone. Even if it was a very, very long line, they do have room for everyone. I'm going to try to see if I can get some questions in to some of the people just to see where they are about voting. The people who come, when you come in, the people are saying thank you, you know, thank you for coming to vote, you know, like, so they're welcoming you. And so it's a really comfortable kind of situation going on here. Let me just check in with a couple of people to see if they'll speak, and I'll be right back with you.
Okay. This is International Black Summit Talk Show Network. We're running over a little bit, but we wanted to get some on-the-scene conversation about this midterm election and the implications of early voting in Chicago. I'm actually not sure if we have that in New York. I'm sure we do. But I will be voting on Tuesday in the normal process. The weather.
Okay, Glenn, I'm back.
Yes, okay.
I'm back. And I do have two wonderful people who are going to allow me to interview them, one male,
okay,
one female. And is our guest still on?
No, he's left the conversation.
Okay, great. I just want to make sure you can hear. Let me put this on speaker. That'll be better, I think.
Okay.
Can you hear me, Glenn?
Yes, we can.
Glenn, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I can't hear you that well. Okay, great. So tell me your name, sir.
Dorsey Norman.
Dorsey Norman and?
Darlene Norman.
And Darlene Norman. Oh, they may be a little related. Okay. Right. She said just a tad. So you are early voting. Voting is evidently very important to you.
Absolutely. It's a must.
It's a must, okay. So tell me how you feel. We've been talking on this show about the importance of this election versus the one most people will come to. Why? What makes this important for you?
Well, the state of Illinois is at a crossroads, and it's important that we get the best leadership available.
Okay.
And between the two candidates, I've made up my mind as to who I think is the best, and I want to make sure my vote counts.
Great, great. I was telling you, Glenn, the state of Illinois is, you know, it's interesting. The communities are supporting candidates that generally would not, I would say, be supportive. But in this particular election, there's been some real interesting marketing, I'll say, and advertising. And a lot of people have gotten on board with a candidate that normally I would say they would not back. And so it's a real crucial thing for people in the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago to get out and vote in this particular election. And there's some real strong feelings and beliefs about these two candidates. Both are male candidates. So let me check in with the Mrs. Okay, tell me your name again, please.
Darlene Norman.
Okay. So, Darlene, tell me what it is about this election that's so important for you.
Well, in this election, like my husband said, the state is at a crossroads, and people are being swayed, I think, for some of the wrong reasons and are not seeing the bigger picture and are being influenced by dollars, in my opinion. And I think it's important to really come out and support the candidates that is going to have the best impact on our community. Whether or not you agree with all of his positions, it's not critical, but you have to support the person that is going to be most supportive to our community. So that's why I'm here.
Yeah. And let me just ask another question. What do you consider supportive to our community?
The person that is going to be most interested in education. Education is one of the biggest issues. I don't think that charter schools are the answer necessarily. I think the minimum wage certainly is a hot button issue that affects our community quite a bit. Pensions, Social Security.
A 17-page ballot, 30-page review. Please, please, please do not pull your ballot cards out. Let them pop out on their own. If you need any help, you
hold on 1 minute. We'll give an instruction. We have a 17-page ballot. Hold on 1 minute.
Oh, oh my goodness.
Yeah, and they're saying, they're just advising people not to pull out your ballot too soon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the line is, that it's a 17-page ballot. Yeah.
Wow.
I would have been late. I would have been here to tell you guys this.
Okay. Okay, we're going back.
So, yeah, the candidate that's going to be most supportive to our community is the one that is interested in things that are going to affect the African-Americans primarily.
Mm-hmm.
And so one is more positive than the other.
Okay. Okay, and that's really interesting. And like I said, the commercials and all of that stuff have stated plainly about different things about the two candidates' feelings about minimum wage. You know, charter schools is a big issue here. You know, the people who are, you know, there are a lot of retired school teachers, and a lot of them retired because It wasn't because they chose to retire. It was because it was the only, kind of like the only choice they had. So that's a big issue, and just a lot of different things. When I ask the question about the community, I'm thinking one of the things in the International Black Summit, we always, in our declaration, it talks about funding our community. You know, how we fund our community and how we think one candidate would support that or not, or the other one not, you know. How do you look at that as far as the two candidates are concerned for Governor Glenn specifically? That's what we're speaking about in this moment, is that we have a governor's race that people have, in the last, I would say, month or so, joined another candidate. And as Darlene spoke, you know, people have gotten in it for different reasons, as they do. You know, politics is politics, and you get what you can get out of it. That's how some people do it. Other people mm-hmm. do it because it helps our community. You know, they get involved. Like our guest said yesterday, it's organizing. It's community organizing and getting people, making people aware of the things that are going on. But when we look at funding our community, and we're moving, so you might hear a little, thank you, you might hear a little background noise because we keep moving down. But when you talk about funding our community, what do you see?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Like how do you think one candidate could better help us fund our community than the other?
Well, now that I understand the question, the answer is obvious. Mm-hmm. Pat Quinn is in our community on a regular basis, not just at election time. Mm-hmm. Rauner, he may be new to the Republican Party, but I've never seen him put forth any programs in our community until it was election time. Okay? So I think it's important for us to realize that Quinn is there on almost a daily basis. Easy to reach and responsive to the questions and the needs of our community.
Okay, great, great.
And if I could just add, I think it's an insult for a candidate to show up and donate large sums of money during this period. We haven't seen you before, and if it's not obvious that you're trying to buy votes, I think we've just got our heads in the sand.
Yeah.
I'd like to add something. There's actually a movement across the country where people of great wealth is trying to gain political power. Not just the candidates, but all of the PACs and all of the different organizations, some political and some just with resources, trying to get people in power to match the financial wealth that they have.
Yeah. And so what do you do when you know that? You know that there's a movement, and we, you know, our organ, the International Black Summit, we are international, so we not only go across the United States, but we're in Canada, Belize, London. You know, we have Brazil, different. What do you do when you know that that's occurring? What do you see as a solution?
Well, people need to emphasize that their vote counts as much as anybody, regardless of your balance sheet. Everybody votes is one vote per person. You have to exercise that right and make sure you turn out the vote.
And the other thing is you have to educate people, and you have to make people really look at the big picture and recognize that you can't be swayed by somebody bringing dollars. You know, you donate $1 million to a credit union in a strip mall. Where have you been for the last several years? And we can't be blinded by that, and we can't be fooled by that. It's trickery,
yeah,
is what it is.
And that's wonderful. Right. Thank you. Thank you both. Glenn, let me ask you if you have some questions for our guest.
Well, two questions. One is, did any of the candidates talk about creating new jobs for the area? And then the other thing is, did any one of the candidates speak about an economic development plan, a master economic development plan for that area that would not only help jobs, but education, youth, and so forth be expressed in that community?
Glenn is in Jamaica, Queens, New York. So,
one of the things that happens at this time of the year, they all make promises about jobs and economic development in the community. Pat Quinn does have a track record, and it hasn't been easy. He has made some inroads, and I think he will continue to make inroads in a manner that we are in agreement with. Rauner has made proposals, most of which we don't agree with. And at this time, because he doesn't have a track record, I wonder if he can really do what he says he's going to do.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Any questions, Glenn, that you would have? Like looking at Chicago from a New York eye. What do you hear? What do you see?
I think that our communities, the communities of African American descent around the country, are facing the same issues, and you know, minimum wage, jobs, economic development, ownership of real estate. I think all of those are basically the same conversations that we need to organize ourselves and hold our candidates accountable for.
Well, Governor Quinn recently, we heard him speak at an event recently, and he talked about Amazon coming to Illinois, into the area, and the number of jobs that are going to be created as a result of that Rauner. And, of course, it's all political political rhetoric. You don't know always what to believe, but the campaign against Rauner is accusing him of having all these corporations and no African-American employees. And when asked about that, his response was he couldn't find any that were qualified, which is very insulting. His track record of his own businesses, he's had many businesses that have gone bankrupt. So I don't know what to expect from him. It's frightening, actually.
Okay. Glenn?
Yes. Yeah, go ahead. Right.
No, I was just putting it, I was just letting you know. It was back up to you to see if you had any other questions.
No, not at this time. I think that both your folks that you interviewed were very clear about what they saw and their vision for the community. So I just want to acknowledge them for being out there and voting.
Thank you all very, very much. Really, really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Perfect two people to walk up and have a conversation with. And I will let you know how you can hear this interview. Glenn, so the line is moving pretty quickly. But again, it's a 17-page ballot. And so.
Yeah. Wow, I know. That's amazing.
So
yeah.
That is what it is. Are you all early voting in New York?
As far as I know, we're not. I'm not. I know that I'm not, and I will be voting on Tuesday. So.
Okay. Yeah, that's what a lot of people, you know. I'm traveling, so I wanted to make sure that I voted before I travel. And I just encourage our listeners to make sure if you are traveling next week that you vote this weekend. Early voting ends in different cities. Like I went through about four or five states the other day, and the signs were up in every state, but the dates were different in every state. Early voting ends tomorrow. Or today, in one of the states that I went through, and different times. So make sure you check to see when early voting ends, and if you missed it, make sure you do it on Tuesday. Say it again, Glenn.
No, I. That was amazing. So I'm actually going to close it out. Thank you for. Being our roving reporter online, interviewing folks in Chicago, Henrietta. And, I want to thank our listeners for the conversation and the opportunity that the midterm elections are. So with that, I'm going to close it out. Good afternoon, and God bless.
God bless. Thanks, Brian. And remember, we are here every Friday, 12:30 p.m. Central Time. And this is available immediately afterwards if you would like to go to blacksummit.org and click on Talk Show and today's day. Have a great weekend.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. And God bless.
God bless.